Hurry into Menards and save big money. Stock up on water softener Salt for softer skin and cleaner clothes. Diamond Crystal is the perfect choice of salt to minimize water softener tank residue. It helps your soaps and detergents clean better while increasing the life of your appliances and plumbing. Save big on Diamond Crystal products at Menards. And don't forget to check out the flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Are you kidding me?
You are looking live.
Winning cures everything. Now for your hosts, Gary and Chris.
And winning cures everything. It is the Monday, January 17th edition of the show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Chris.
And we have got a lot of news to discuss today. Obviously, NFL playoffs going on over the weekend. But you guys know, but at this point, we do the NFL show on Wednesday mornings. So we will leave it until then. But there were some very entertaining games. Chris, I was highly, highly impressed with Joe Burrow's performance over the weekend. Was not impressed with Mac Jones. I will say that that wasn't so much a Mac Jones thing, was it? That was Patriots defense problems. I mean, good.
I think some of those things are correlated. It's real easy just to shit on the Patriots defense, but it's also understanding that they're on the field constantly because the offense is completely inept.
This is true. This is 100% true. And I don't know exactly how you fix that. Other than, you know, you'll need more weapons. You'll need more time in the offense. You know, that sometimes we forget these kids are rookies, but Mac Jones did not look good.
At this point in time, you're not a rookie. That is said at every level of sports. Once you've made it to the playoffs, you have made it through your first season. And there's just a lot of throws he can't make. That's just the truth. He threw two interceptions in the red zone, in the end zone, and that's it. This is what I know you don't want to hear this, but this is what you get from Alabama quarterbacks because they look so dominating in college because the talent gap difference from them to they're so much better than everybody else they play. True. When they get to the NFL, and they're not better than everybody else, and their receivers aren't better than everybody else, and their offensive line aren't better than everybody else, and the actual quarterback has to be better, they're not. They're just not. Yeah. So if you want to go play on Sundays and you want to get that second contract, it would behoove you to try – I know everyone wants to win a title in college. I understand that. If you want real legends – You want to be real special, you will go somewhere where you can learn to play through adversity.
True. Give me thoughts on Ben Roethlisberger and ESPN's – or, sorry, NBC's – was it NBC that I watched on last night?
It was NBC.
All the mess, right, with the Hall of Famer and guy and leader. Yep,
best guy in the world and leader and all this other stuff. It's all bullshit. There was a time it wasn't his first Super Bowl and it wasn't his last run. There was a time in the middle of these 17, 18 years where he was really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Outside of that, he's good at football. Outside of that, he's kind of been a piece of shit most of his life. So that's, you know,
I thought you
all would, right. I don't understand why everybody has to be good at football. And here's the thing. I wouldn't bring that up if they didn't exaggerate it the other way. Why can't you just talk about the positive things that this guy's done on the football field? Why do you have to go into the extra superlatives that aren't true? Why do you have to do that?
He's been
a great guy since he's gotten married. Oh, that's fantastic. It's really hard to like sexually assault people randomly all the time when you're married, when your wife is there and you got two little girls now. And I understand, yes, he's a different person today than he was then. But don't say anything if you know it's just going to sound stupid for the rest of time. It's going to live forever on these videos.
If it makes it easy for people on the internet to completely blast it, like, then don't do it.
There's no reason to exaggerate. Just keep it football only. And listen, the dude won a Super Bowl his rookie year, I think.
Yeah.
And once again, It doesn't matter. Like, that team wasn't his. That was a completely loaded football, just the same way Peyton Manning won a Super Bowl his last season.
Yeah. And
that team wasn't his. He was god awful. He was one of the worst quarterbacks to ever play football that we have a QBR rating.
He was just good enough to not screw it up, right?
Ben Roethlisberger has to be the worst playoff QB we've ever seen in the history of the playoffs. That offense last night, at one point in time, late in the third quarter, when the game is 35-7, everything from that point forward is garbage time. And Ben Roethlisberger and the Pittsburgh Steelers had 45 yards of offense.
Yes, it was putrid. When they went up 7-0 off of a fumble return, I thought, okay, there's no way that this continues. I mean, because it was a very boring, you know,
first quarter.
Well, yeah, first quarter into the second quarter, right? It was at three
and out. Once the Chiefs started, rolling, the Chiefs finished up 21 unanswered points, then gets the ball back after the halftime, and then scores first drive of the game. Mike Tomlin winning the coin toss and choosing to take the ball, and I believe it was run, pass, punt. And I think, well, that didn't work out the way you thought it would, did it, Mike?
Nope.
Like, he's an outstanding coach. You can't criticize him a whole lot for many things. I'm just going to tell you, I'm not letting Kansas City have the chance to score and score. But if I win the coin toss, we could have the worst. It doesn't matter. We are going to defer because I'm not giving them a chance to score twice in a row. I just can't allow it.
It was just insane. Like, if you're going to take the ball, you better have something creative dialed up. You better have something ready. And instead, and I wonder, like, how much of that is Canada, how much of that is, you know, just.
But it's irrelevant. That's this offense, Gary.
Oh yeah.
Now I don't get into the analytics. I'm not the big numbers guy. This has to be one of the worst offenses by the numbers to ever make the playoffs.
Oh yes. Yes, but remember, they almost made it. Was it last year when Big Ben was hurt? Or 2 years ago, whatever
it
was.
Well, they did make the playoffs, and they got their ass whipped.
Well, no, when Duck was because they missed it at 8-8. Yeah. So, like, it blows my mind how this team has not had a losing record in forever, because that offense is putrid.
So many of those things are you know, different and complicated, because how long has that division been just garbage? Like, you've had the reason the Titans might be the fourth best team, third or fourth best team left in the AFC. Okay. Yeah. But they got to play the Texans and the Jags. Like, you get four bye weeks. For a long time, the Bengals and the Browns were four bye weeks. You split 1-1 against the Ravens, and you go through your division losing one game. You can go 5-1 every year like clockwork.
Yeah.
That has a lot to do with when you only need to get to 8 wins to not have a losing season, and you basically have 5 of them in the bag. That's you know, you're winning 3 games a year that aren't your shit division.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're 100% right. Let's go on and get into some of this. I know you got things to do this morning. So let me start with the rundown first. Go to winningcureseverything.com website. Got everything you need to know about us. Everywhere to subscribe, follow, etc. If you haven't already, subscribe to the podcast. Leave a nice 5-star review. You can do that at both Apple Podcast and Spotify now. Spotify allows you to leave reviews. So hopefully things are going well over there. We do have quite a few listeners on that Spotify app. I host the BetUS College Football Show. There's a link in the description for that. It comes out every Wednesday. And the show is brought to you by BetUS. It is where the game begins. It's America's premier online sportsbook. There's a link in the description for you to click. There are plenty of promo codes, promos, and all that good stuff. Go and take advantage of the bonuses. We're in the NFL playoffs. We have got college basketball going on. We got the NBA going on. College football will be here before you know it. The early CFP title odds are out for 2022. So go ahead and take advantage of all of those. And then, of course, Chris, we ain't that far from baseball. We got all kind of things going on. So the calendar never stops moving, and we know that because of the first thing that I'm going to bring up here. Hawaii coach Todd Graham resigned on Friday night, late on Friday night, and you want to talk about a crazy, crazy story, and we've talked about this before. SFGate.com, San Francisco Gate, put out a story which is weird that San Francisco, like a news organization from San Francisco, would be reporting on Hawaii athletics, but they got all the details from the players, and they were complaining about Todd Graham just telling them outright, hey, I am using this job as a stepping stone. You are not going to screw this up for me. I'm using this to prep to move to the NFL. And all the players basically said that this guy is a piece of trash. He has taken all of the joy away from this game for me. There were 7 starters that decided to transfer after the season, and it just continued on and on and on. And Hawaii basically let it be known that, yeah, we understand it sucks, but like, we're not in the financial position to get rid of him, so like, we're just going to ride this thing out. You guys can leave if you want to. And it just kept going and kept going, and more stories kept coming out, etc. And Todd Graham finally just decided to resign. I think when you can't get anybody to play for you, it makes it really difficult to do your job. If you realize, oh, this turned on me in a very quick way, if I was going to use this as a stepping stone, that's not happening. Like, there were all of these different things that kind of led to this point, and I think it was a mutual separation.
I think there's some negotiation that went on.
Oh,
there.
Yeah.
Hawaii
was just not going to pay him his full buyout to fire him.
I guarantee you he didn't walk away with nothing either.
Right, right. But I also don't think that he got the full thing. I think this was really what was best for everybody. And now we start looking at, okay, now what works in Hawaii? They are going through stadium renovations right now. They're going through the athletic department is a little bit of a mess because of all the COVID stuff, but, you know, they're not, it's not awful, right? They can figure something out, but you need somebody that understands the culture down there. And the biggest list of names right now, June Jones, former Hawaii coach, currently out of coaching. Why would he step back in?
It's so weird that everybody, we lack so much creativity in the people that cover college sports sometimes and that talk about it. Like, we don't know how to think about anything other than what we've already seen.
Agreed.
Like, we work under the assumption that Hawaii's always only had offensive coaches, so we know it's going to be an offensive coach. Okay, we can't think of anybody who wants to take it over. They're a complete mess. You know, let's look back. Who's been coaches in the past who loved it there? We'll get them to come back. Like, there's like 600 million people, in the country. Like, somebody can find a way to find somebody who wants this job, right? Like,
well, so part of it is, remember, Hawaii, just like any other school, has boosters, has people that are highly invested into the program, right?
Yes.
And they did not like going out of that tree, right? They had what they wanted. Now, Timmy Chang is the other one. He is the wide receivers coach at Colorado State right now. He was a record-setting quarterback at Hawaii. He's only 40. He isn't really ready to be a head coach, maybe an offensive coordinator. However, if Timmy Chang is only going to come back to be the head coach, then they might be interested in that. There's UCLA assistant head coach Brian Norwood. He's a former Hawaii player. Johnny Nansen, who is Arizona's defensive coordinator.
We have a Michigan problem all over again.
Yes, like
they only want Hawaii people.
Yeah.
If you're gonna limit your coaching staff to that because you had a bad look, just don't hire an asshole. Like, this is not that complicated. Well, guy was not one of us.
Agreed.
And look how bad he was. So now you're not talking about Michigan. At least Michigan has a huge net to cast out. To get a lot of Michigan guys, right?
Yeah.
Like, the pool of Hawaii dudes ain't real big.
No. It's certainly not.
Why would you do that? Who runs a business this way? Who runs anything? Forget a business. Who runs anything that's ever been successful this way?
Here's what it sounds like. It sounds like they want somebody to just come back in and reestablish the foundation, right? When Rolo left, they had a pretty good foundation built, which, by the way, why not just bring Rolo back?
I was just about to say, if you want to be uncreative and bring back somebody, just call Rolo.
Yeah. I mean, because it worked last time. Like, I mean, what are we talking about? Nobody else wants him. And if you are in dire straits, you can get him on the cheap. So,
that's a perfect marriage because you know he'd love it too.
Oh, yes.
You know he'd love to come back.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. So that's, I mean, that would be my vote. But them trying to go the old route, bring back the people that they know. You and I both have talked about this many, many times. I don't necessarily agree with that.
Hire good people. Hire smart people. Hire problem solvers. You don't have to just hire somebody because they used to be there.
Yes. Yes. Agreed. We'll move on from there. I want to talk about ACC coaches have unanimously voted against CFP expansion. Now, we talked about this a little bit last week at some, or really over the course of several months now, about why they would be voting against this when you know it would actually be good for them. And David Hale put out a pretty good tweet about it, just going through all the different reasons. And it's nothing to necessarily do with like them trying to get Notre Dame to join the conference. Like, we only want 8, so Notre Dame is forced to come in here, etc. It's a ton of different things that all kind of play in together, and I kind of get it, right? There's a lot of people that are explaining, like, these players do not want to play extra games, etc. Here's Jim Phillips's comments on playoff expansion. The ACC is the primary league holding up expansion, but they are not alone. It says, while the ACC is the most steadfast, it's largely shared by others, including the Big Ten. It says, in July, Phillips was preaching the need for this holistic review of all of college football. It's not a new thing. He's not wrong. The landscape has changed a ton. He said it's worth understanding those dynamics before making big changes to it. And then he's got number 3, in almost certainly a leverage play, once ACC, Pac-12, Big 12, G5 vote for expansion, what's the motivation for everyone to come to the table on the other issues in college football, let alone to consider what the ACC has to say on those issues? This is basically the ACC's trump card. Then it says, people are overly focused on the one issue of expansion. Phillips is essentially saying that if you want dessert, you need to eat your vegetables. Like, how can you get any pudding if you don't eat your meat? Look at the NCAA approaching NIL. They had years, they did nothing, right? They were just at a coaches convention in Texas. The overwhelming takeaway, everybody agrees that there are problems with opt-outs, transfers, the recruiting calendar, in-season coaching movement, tampering, but nobody agrees on any solutions, and there has to be some kind of a ticking clock to change that. So for Phillips, working with the ACC, there's unanimity, like, in waiting on expansion to try and get some of this other stuff figured out first. So where I was very much against the ACC and thought, okay, them voting against this is bad for the league, because if you don't have Clemson, you're obviously not going to get anybody into the playoff. Is that the end-all be-all, though? And I don't know that it necessarily is. You know, I think Pitt and Michigan State, et cetera, still had a great season. And you and I both agree that there should be playoff expansion, but there are other things that need to happen along with it. And if the ACC wants to use this as their trump card, like, hey, we're not going to vote for anything until we fix all this other crap, I think I can get on board with that.
No. This is what politicians do, by the way. Jim Phillips, hell of a politician, should run. He is the same type of asshole that is running Congress right now. It's if we can't solve all the problems, we ain't solving any of the problems. All right. That is a bullshit excuse from somebody who doesn't want to do something. Okay.
Oh, by the way, for anybody that does not know, Jim Phillips, former Northwestern athletic department, or athletic director, excuse me. So he comes from Chicago. Private institution, very
small private school. The smallest school in the Big Ten.
Exactly. Highly regarded.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. I don't care. Like, what he's doing right now is not good for the sport, and it's not good for his conference. Okay. So that makes me question why he's doing it, because it doesn't make any sense. And the bullshit argument that we don't want to play extra games. Well, guess what? Only Pitt would have played one extra game. If they won their first round game, they would have played an extra game. That's it. That's the list right there. You're not asking the whole conference to play an extra game. You're not asking all these teams to play an extra game. You're asking one team. Alabama and Georgia would have played possibly one extra game. That's it. That's the list. And the idea that I'm not fixing anything until we fix all these other things, well, then somebody else just has the luxury of saying, well, I'm not fixing NIL until we fix the transfer portal and expansion. And somebody else is going to say, well, I'm not fixing the transfer portal until we fix NIL and the playoff. Everybody gets – this is what politicians do. If you go into the world, if you can stomach it for enough and listen to the news – and you hear about political news, this is what they all do. It is a cop-out. It is a bullshit excuse. Everybody is fighting for their quote-unquote cause, and the argument for everyone else to not get on board with that is, well, we've got these other things, and that's not as important to me. And so this is a bullshit thing. It's not as if you can't do more than one thing at one time. If voting for this and getting this passed meant it's one less thing you have to worry about, Mr. Phillips, and now you can start addressing these other things, then that would be spectacular. But you see it as, I can't do anything until we do everything that I want. That is political bullshit. And I don't know that any other writer or sports columnist or anybody who talks about this stuff for a living, we have a very small niche audience, okay? Tens of people will hear this.
Yes.
Fantastic. Thousands of people with bigger voices than ours need to be calling this bullshit out. They need to say it in a more eloquent and intelligent way than I do, because I am a knuckle-dragging Neanderthal, and I understand that. But I'm telling you, this is what politicians do to cover the fact that they don't want to do anything or they don't want to pass something. And 9 times out of 10, it is for corruption reasons. I want to see bank statements. I want to see money. People are telling this guy, this is not coaches that don't want to play an extra game. That is a lie. That is an outright lie, because if Pitt wins their bowl game, their first round of the playoff game, quote unquote, which would have probably been a home game. I don't know who they would have played. They probably wouldn't have been a home game. But anyway, neither here nor there. If they won that game, then they would have gotten one extra game.
Yeah. Yeah, one more game.
One. And it's because you won. If you don't want to play that game, just go lay down.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, it's not like they wouldn't have played an extra game if they were playing for a national championship.
That's it.
Right?
That's the problem. No one in college basketball has ever complained that we're playing too many games. Why? Because they all want to win the championship. They want to keep playing. Because as soon as you lose, you go home. And go ask these seniors, all right? I would like to take, I don't know, a random collection of 100 college players that were major college football players that played junior and senior year a lot of playing time, but never got to play a down of any professional sport in their life. I'd like to poll them 2, 3, 10 years from now, from their last time of playing, and say, hey, what would you do to have gotten one more game?
Yeah.
Unanimously, I bet all of them would have said, I'd have knifed a random family member to be able to get one more game in.
Now, that takes away, like, obviously the difference there being guys that are first, second, maybe even third round NFL guys that just don't want to risk getting hurt. But
they're all wanting to play for championship games.
Right.
Nobody for any playoff team has ever set out.
Exactly.
Not one team at four games. So that point is moot. The majority of these guys are going to play the same amount of two teams will end up playing one more game at the end of this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're 100% right. The most that anybody can play is what, 17? If I'm not mistaken.
And that's if a lower seed makes the championship game.
Exactly. You're talking about somebody that didn't win their conference title game. That's it. Right. So, yeah, it's a strange situation. But the ACC, of course, is the one that everybody's pointing at right now. And we'll see how this goes. I mean, we've still got a little bit of time, but there's not much left. If you know that you're going to change in 2026, why not just go on and change it in, 2024? Why not go on and get this thing done so that we can figure it out.
Well, I understand. Right? Yeah. The only reason I would not do it early is if that means the whole thing's married to ESPN.
Like yeah, that no, I get. For but sure. We've talked about that. Yeah.
But then talk about that. Don't give me a bullshit lie. When you say unanimously, all, what, 12 teams in the big whatever, the ACC, in the 14 teams in the ACC, all of them unanimously say they don't want to do it because the extra game. Like I said, two or three of them at most would ever play one extra game, and that's it.
Oh, yeah.
And it would be for a playoff, so that's a lie. That is just an outright lie.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see what you're talking about. Let's talk about Michigan president Mark Schlissel right quick. Hopefully I said that right. Mark Schlissel was fired for having an affair with a subordinate at the University of Michigan. All of this stuff that came out. So basically, he was sending emails to a subordinate discussing how much he wanted to be with her and this and that. And obviously she was like reciprocating. This was all totally consensual between the two. However, this was a subordinate and they were doing it through the Michigan email system, et cetera. I'm going to tie this back into Jim Harbaugh. What do you think the relationship is or was like between the school president and Jim Harbaugh? Do you think that there was anything there, and maybe that's why Harbaugh was discussing or letting it be known that he would be interested in going back to the NFL? Or do you think these two things are maybe just not tied together whatsoever?
I don't think they have anything to do with each other.
I wondered about that. Now, I talked myself off of it, but you never know if these things can still be tied in somewhere, which is why I wanted to ask you your thoughts on it. It's a strange situation because Michigan has kind of always been a little bit holier than thou. And with this coming out, it was, basically an inappropriate relationship with the university employee. How do people continue? Like, we saw this with Hugh Freeze. Like, why are you doing this through company stuff? Like, what are we talking about?
Like, nobody has a Gmail account. Like, Jesus. I don't know.
The whole
the school sees themselves as more holier than thou. Yeah. Like, okay, that's overblown. These are people. Yeah. These are two folks that are no different than you and I or anybody else. Okay. And if these two folks found love and they want to leave their current families for each other, be my guest. You just can't do this shit at work. There's a hierarchy here. And if I'm your boss or you're my boss, then it is inappropriate because it would cause conflicts at work. Okay. That's it. That's the list. You can't do those things, but these people didn't do anything wrong or bad or, immoral to the extent of outside of the only person that this president owes an apology to is if he's married his current wife, unless he's wanting to leave her, then he doesn't owe her anything, but probably child support and alimony. And then that's it. Like, do whatever, find happiness in this world. Okay. That's all. Doesn't matter. I don't see this as a scandal. We're way past the days where, you can clutch your pearls because two people are having a consensual relationship. Now, if we find out that this lady that he was seeing, made $28,000 a year and somehow got a $60,000 car that the university was paying for, now you're using taxpayer money to support your girlfriend, and we're not down with that. Like, that's when we get a problem. But if you make a lot of money and you want to buy her a car, then I don't give a shit. Whatever you want. So
cheers to you.
I don't see these things as a scandal. I don't see these things, he just didn't get to have this job anymore. That's it.
Yeah.
He'll get a job somewhere else. He'll do something else. That's fine. This has absolutely zero effect on Jim Harbaugh or the football team.
I think you are correct there. Iowa has signed Kirk Ferentz to a new deal through 2029. He's making $7 million a year. And almost immediately, once this thing was done, Ferentz decided to basically disband the Football Diversity Advisory Committee right after they let it be known publicly that they suggested that Ferentz and the AD, Gary Barta, both resign from their jobs because of all the issues that went on, like before the COVID pandemic, leading up to it, et cetera. They basically
that's not what happened. You're using the word "they" incorrectly.
Go ahead.
One person on that committee did that.
He was the head of the committee, though, right?
Oh, okay, yes. But all the other people that have been involved in the committee have seemingly come out and said, we didn't agree with that. We didn't want that. And they all agreed with disbanding the committee as well. This was not a Kurt Ferentz rule by an iron fist thing.
Okay. All right.
So let's be real careful when we're saying that the committee wanted him fired and he disbands the committee. He doesn't have that kind of power or authority. All right.
Right.
One person who happened to be the head of the committee wanted him gone. Okay.
Gotcha.
And everybody else wanted him to stay. And they all agreed, outside of him, to disband the committee, is the way I read the article. Is the way I read.
Okay. So I read two different articles.
I don't read very well. Yeah. So I could have misinterpreted this, but I believe one person wanted to basically take control of the athletic department.
That would make sense. It was a former football player, and I forget his name, but that's I had read two articles about it over the weekend and was like, man, this seems really fishy. But, you know, Ferentz obviously kind of runs the show, right? And will continue to do so. But he had put together this this advisory board to help them get through a rough patch where, you know, he had to fire his longtime strength and conditioning coach over.
They had problems.
Yeah,
and they needed to address these problems. That didn't. What I'm saying does not absolve any of that. They had legitimate issues that needed to get fixed. But I think other people on this committee saw this as a power play and decided we're not okay with that. We're going to shut this down. We think we have, as a school, addressed many of these things. We're going to continue to address these things, but we don't need this committee to do so, because now this committee has turned into something where it is now just a power struggle, and that's not good for the school. I'm telling you what I think the rest of what I got from what we read, the rest of the people on the committee felt.
I like this different idea here, because it's completely different from what I was reading into it initially, right? But obviously, you get something like this that becomes political, and there's going to be dissenting sides on both sides, right? You get basically this one story of he is a dictator, he runs that whole athletic department, etc., and then you have the other stories that come out that obviously I did not see.
So this is a tweet that I saw after all that from Jordan Lomax, who I think was on the committee. Instead of being so quick to write an article, this is him shitting on the people who wrote the first article. Instead of being so quick to write an article, you guys should have reached out to other committee members for their thoughts. This is one-sided article from David Porter's opinion, David Porter's the guy that ran the committee and wanted the one, which I and others disagreed with. David Porter was trying to take control, I think, of the athletic department. And Lomax was one of the people on the committee who said, this is not what happened. This is not at all what is going on. And we're ending this.
Okay. It makes sense.
That's how I read that. So now, I could misinterpret that easily.
No. That makes absolutely perfect sense. Absolutely, because obviously you've got a group of people there that are supposed to have varying opinions, right? You're supposed to all get together and come up with what is best for the school, and I don't know that them firing Ferentz and Gary Barta was going to be best for the school at this point. Let's get back to the contract extension. Through 2029? I mean, what are we talking? And $7 million a year? Like, he was already getting paid.
$7 million doesn't bother me.
Yeah, that's like nothing that crazy. It's a little crazy when you look at it compared to Chip Kelly's, and we'll talk about that in just a second.
One-year coach at Michigan State just got more than this.
That's true. That's obviously, like, everybody thinks he had other suitors as well.
It's irrelevant.
It's market, right? It's the market price.
He got more. He's making more than this in the same conference, and he's had one successful season.
True.
Second-year coach. I shouldn't say one-year coach.
Basically, this is just saying whenever Ferentz decides to hang it up, he's still going to be here. Like, we are not going to force him out, right?
That's right.
So that I do find it interesting that they extended him all the way through, you know, another 7 years. But man, like, that's a Gus Malzahn deal from a few years ago that we talked about. Oh my gosh, can you believe they guaranteed this man this much money? And obviously there is a buyout here, but like
there's a big difference between him and Gus. He's been there for his entire life.
Yeah, like, it's 22, 23 seasons? I mean, it's been
forever. Come on. Yeah. This is not Gus Malzahn.
No. But what I'm not comparing him to Gus Malzahn. I'm comparing the contracts, right? Because Gus Malzahn's contract that everybody was up in arms about was a fully guaranteed 7-year, $49 million contract, $7 million per year. And everybody thought, what in the world? This is insane.
Oh, that's a new world, though, Gary.
But it's a whole brand new world.
Look at the Big Ten. Oh, yeah. Big Ten. You're talking about an 8-year deal and a 10-year deal at Penn State, Michigan State.
Yeah.
All right. This is why Mississippi is going to be real hard to hire top tier coaches, because we still have one of those antiquated laws that says we can only sign a state employee. The maximum contract you can get is 4 years. Yes. Okay. Now, the game of college sports has changed when you are starting to give guys that have, you're talking about Penn State that's had two seasons where they've had losing seasons back-to-back that would have gotten people fired at other places. They just gave that guy a 10-year deal, okay? 4 years at Mississippi, ain't going to cut it. Ain't going to cut it. These guys are going to get snatched up, and they're going to roll quickly.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen. You're 100% right. UCLA signs Chip Kelly through 2025, making $4.7 million per year, and it's almost exactly what you and I talked about when we said on the Friday show, like, they got to come up with something pretty quick, because coaches don't go into the last year of their contract, especially with no buyout, right? You cannot get recruiting done. You can't really get transfers in, et cetera, because they don't know what's going to happen. Like, he could have literally been fired for $0. There was no buyout at all. So if UCLA had decided this week, hey, you know what? Like, this past year was cool, but we don't know that there's really been a lot of progress. So, like, we're going to let you go, and we're going to just go our separate ways. They could have done that. It would have made very little sense unless they had a home run hire, you know, ready to roll. But they
there was zero chance that I thought they were going to get some kind of deal done. And I think this is a fair deal. Based on what he's produced and what he's done, this team has improved, but they're still not where UCLA wants to be. And so, yeah, you give him a deal. He's making decent money. And you know, that's it. This, you know, you got a fair to middling deal because you've been a fair to middling team.
Yes, yes. I don't know what the future holds from there. But this is not something that is, you know, where they cannot get out of it. And it's not something where Chip Kelly can't get out of it if he gets a better offer on the table going forward. Right now, basically, they are locked up, and it gives him a little bit of a security blanket to try and get things done to improve the team. And I think it's a good move on both sides. On both sides. Real quick, before we get into an SEC conference rewind to close out the day, impact transfers. USC finally landed Mario Williams. That had been rumored for a long, long time. The thing that was surprising about it was, and it wasn't surprising that Mario Williams went with Lincoln Riley to USC. What was surprising is it was widely known that Mario Williams was going to sign wherever Caleb Williams signs. Or at least that's what everybody had been told, anybody that was close to Mario Williams. That's the reason why he left Oklahoma, is he wanted Caleb Williams to be his quarterback. And he announced before Caleb did. So, obviously, we think that Caleb Williams is going to USC, but you and I have talked multiple times on the show about different options and whatnot, and Caleb's dad is basically saying, look, we're going to fill this thing out. We're going to make sure that we got the right fit before we use up our one-time transfer. Because if he goes somewhere and he doesn't like it, he would have to sit out another season. So he wants to go where he will be best developed, etc. Does it surprise you that Mario Williams just went ahead and went over to USC? Like, does he – I guess he trusts Lincoln Riley enough.
Like, it tells – well, yeah, he's a wide receiver. Jesus, you know, come on, man. Like, yeah. This is not – like, he's a good player, and he could be a great player.
Yeah.
But he's a wide receiver at the end of the day. What this tells me is there's – Caleb Williams might end up at USC, but I've said this all along. If he was going to go there, he should have already gone. Every second, every day that goes by is a bad day for USC.
Yes.
And they better be planning for quarterback.
Yes, you've got that right. You have got that right.
Because there's a reason he's taking this long, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody does this just because it's fun.
No, he's doing the process. He is.
That means he's That means he is shopping around. So
we lost your video. I don't know what happened.
I know it does. Almost every time we do this damn show,
whenever you're on Zoom, it does it every now and then. Yeah, it's strange. All right, so let me bring this up. USC quarterback Jackson Dart was posting pictures with Lane Kiffin down in Oxford in the snow on Sunday. Found that very interesting, but this would be like Ole Miss is looking for a quarterback. Luke Altmyer was okay in the Sugar Bowl against Baylor.
No, they're looking for a quarterback.
But they're looking for a quarterback, obviously. And we only saw a little bit of Jackson Dart. This was one of those kids in the recruiting cycle in 2020 and 2021, whatever, that you didn't get a whole lot of film on him. Because of, you know, COVID shortened high school season, you know, et cetera, you didn't get to see what he was fully capable of. And there were people that talked about him, you know, as, we need to see him prove it. But there were also people that said, this kid has every tool you could possibly need to be a big time quarterback. He went ahead over to USC, and now obviously he is in the transfer portal. He is doing his thing. I think he'd be fantastic with Lane Kiffin. Like, Kiffin and Ole Miss could do significantly worse than getting Jackson Dart to come all the way down to Oxford, Mississippi. He could be great down there. I would imagine that this thing gets done. If he's posting pictures with Kiffin, he's not doing it with other coaches. Like, he's supposed to, did you see the picture that he posted?
No.
It's like them in front of, what was it, it's like some high-end car, and they both like got their hoods on, like looking down at the ground. Like it was a photo shoot.
Oh no, hang on, I did see it because later in the car they've swapped hoodies. I do remember that. I had a Mississippi State friend send me that, and they were like, now Lane's doing jersey swaps with kids he's trying to recruit.
Oh, yeah.
And Lane breaks his Porsche out all the time because he had the Porsche out for another kid that he was trying to recruit. I don't remember when this was. It was before the first signing day. And so, you know, I guess, you know, Lane has a Porsche and he, you know, uses it to try to get kids. He lets them drive it around town and whatever. Okay.
That's Let's fine. See.
Lane's a good recruiter Lane's a really good coach, and Dart would be fun and exciting in Oxford.
Let's see. There we go. It's an Aston Martin.
I thought he had a Porsche.
He might have one of those too.
Well, now there's a chance he's getting loaner vehicles for these, you know, for these recruiting trips.
Yeah. Oh, entirely.
He's finding out what these kids are interested in and you know, whatever.
Yeah. It's interesting. Very interesting. And then I wanted to bring up Arkansas because Arkansas landed LSU cornerback Dwight McLaughlin, who was a starter this year and was really, really good. They have also gotten linebacker Drew Sanders, a former five-star recruit from Alabama. So Sanders entered the transfer portal after the national championship game. Sanders missed a big portion of the year injured, but, I mean, he was a starter early on in the season. Kid can play, absolutely play. On top of that, early in the cycle, in the transfer portal cycle, they got four-star freshman defensive lineman Landon Jackson, defensive lineman from LSU, and Oklahoma wide receiver Jaden Hazelwood, who was a former top five recruit, had 39 catches this year at Oklahoma, but obviously quarterback issues there made it a little – it was a full wide receiver room at Oklahoma, I will say that. Arkansas was not just a flash in the pan this year. Like,
no,
Arkansas,
I don't think so.
They are rolling in the transfer portal, and recruiting for this season and for next season has picked up. So long as they keep those coordinators there. Like, they are going to be a force to be reckoned with, man. Like, this was not just some, you know, like I said, flash in the pan 9-4 season where everything went right, and when they lose their leaders, they're not going to be good. They are building, man. Like, this is going to be a scary entity going forward.
Arkansas and LSU swapped some DBs around. We took two of their starters, and they took one of ours. And that's just what the transfer portal is going to bring.
Yeah.
You know, it's just it is, and I've had this conversation with, you know, one of my best friends who's a big Arkansas fan over the weekend. I just let him know because he was furious when the two LSU guys came, and our two guys left for LSU, and I just told him, I said, look, you know, LSU lost our best DB to Alabama, And I said, my first reaction is pissed off. And then my second reaction is I've been fighting for this. And I think it's right that they have the right to do so. So if it's right, it's got to be right when it hurts. And, you know, the door has to swing both ways. That's just the only grown-up way to see it. We are grown-ups, and we should be able to see nuance and understanding and reasoning.
Yeah. If kids do not want to be where they are, they should have the ability to leave. And I like the one-time rule because you don't want them going, you know, you gotta set roots down at some point and be able to deal with adversity, right?
That's right.
So one time you can do it, and you don't have to sit out. If you do it again, as we saw, like with Jake Haner and several other guys, after you do it that next time, you are going to have to sit out a season. Like that, that's right. Which is the way that it's always been, et cetera. So let's move on. Let's go on and knock out this SEC rewind. I want to do one of these for each conference. I think this will be a lot of fun. Basically go over the best games, the best players, who exceeded expectations, who underachieved, et cetera, and then some of the coaching changes. Best games. I've got a list down. Do you have a list, or do you want me to just kind of roll through mine?
Oh, for the best games, like of the
season? SEC season,
I mean, no, I've got a couple that I know off the top of my head.
Go on and tell me what's go on and tell me off your head, and then I will mark them off of my list right quick.
Arkansas, Ole Miss, and Oxford.
Yes, so I had that. I put that as number 8. Really, it should have been higher, but I think I'm looking at this more as like memorable games. And that one was a lot of fun. It was on.
It was an amazing game. I literally just pulled that out of my ass, but that's incredible. I think that was the best game of the season in the SEC. Yes. I really do.
Yes.
It was super competitive. It was super back and forth. It was big play after big play. You've got a kid that grew up 15 minutes away from Ole Miss football stadium playing quarterback for Arkansas. Just the storylines, the big plays after big plays. It came down to a 2-point conversion to end it. I mean, I loved everything about it. It was just a perfect, perfect Oxford day.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. Texas A&M 41, Alabama 38. I had as number 1 because the most people watch that. The most people seem to remember that one. The bad thing for the Ole Miss-Arkansas game was there were so many other people that were watching Red River at the exact same time because Red River was bananas.
But hang on. Now, that's not what we're talking about. Right, best game.
It's okay, so A&M Alabama was up there. So mainly, maybe I shouldn't even just put rankings on here. But we'll talk about some of these. Alabama-Auburn in 4 overtimes. It wasn't a well-played game, but
close game and best game ain't the same thing. That wasn't a good game for anything at all.
The Georgia-Clemson game to start the season, that started it off for Georgia. That was an interesting game. Neither offense could do anything against the other defense. It was JT Daniels' team at that point. And Georgia completely shifted since then, but you saw early on the signs that this defense is going to be absurd. And they were all season, hence why they won the national championship. I wrote down Arkansas 40, Texas 21. That was Arkansas's coming out party, right? Like it was.
Yeah.
I think a little bit shocking that they were able to dismantle Texas in the way that they did. And it let everybody know that Arkansas was going to be really, really good. And partly that Texas was not going to be great this season. But it wasn't so much that they weren't going to be great because, they lost to Arkansas. Like, Arkansas was good.
Arkansas A&M game was amazing. And then the other game that comes to my mind immediately is Tennessee-Kentucky.
Tennessee-Kentucky I've got on here as well. I've got, let's see, Ole Miss 31, Tennessee 26. Of course, everybody throwing everything on the field, et cetera.
Yep.
But that was an incredibly interesting game, a fun game. Seeing Matt Corral Ole Miss, I don't know what to really make of that game because Ole Miss's offense couldn't really get going, but their defense played so well, and Tennessee couldn't get anything going either. But it was the chess match between those two was awesome. So I loved that one. LSU 49, Florida 42. Shocker. Right? that one was a lot of fun to watch because
yeah, it's probably the most shocking outcome of the season.
LSU
well, no,
could do
no South Carolina, Florida would have been the most shocking.
Yeah, I've got South season. Carolina, Florida all the way down at the bottom
because that was a complete ass drubbing.
Yeah, that was a
just what 40 to 15, something like that. Just a complete disaster of a football game.
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. But LSU, Florida, LSU's offense had been able to do basically nothing yep. all season, and they come out, and that was kind of the beginning of the end for Dan Mullen. Was man, you have lost to these dudes two times in a row when they've got very little to play for. Like, that's right. What is it? Because LSU was coming off of being beaten at Kentucky by 3 touchdowns. Like, I mean, it was just insane. Florida was like a 2-touchdown favorite in that game. Alabama 31, Florida 29. That was interesting. That lets you know immediately this is not the same Alabama team that you are used to watching. But also, like, how different is this season for Florida if they get that thing done, right? It kind of this is going back into the multiverse kind of thing, right? Like yeah. what changes? What butterfly effect goes in there if Florida is able to hit that 2-point conversion and then win in overtime?
You gotta think Florida wins another game that they like. They don't lose to South Carolina if they beat Alabama because some weird juju happens, right? Or they don't lose to LSU because you know just something different happens in the guys, you know, a confidence or a swagger or something of that nature.
Yeah, I mean the Kentucky Florida game, which was gross and disgusting to watch. It was a 2013 win for Kentucky, but. They had a special teams touchdown. Kentucky's offense could do nothing against Florida's defense, but Florida's offense kept giving them the ball and just, oh, it was a mess. Absolute mess. But
talk about the butterfly effect. A&M Alabama, think about if that game is 2 weeks earlier. The 2 weeks before that game, A&M lost to Arkansas and to Mississippi State.
Back to back.
If they beat Bama and then play Arkansas and Mississippi State, I guarantee you they win one of those two games, if not both of them.
Agreed.
Because this is what confidence does. This is what – because after they beat Bama, they go on a run.
Oh, yeah.
And they're not going on a run, a little run. They go on a run, and they're killing everybody.
Yes. Yes.
They got to Ole Miss, and they fell apart against Ole Miss.
Yeah, lost that one, and then lost to LSU to end the season. That's why they ended up 8-4. But this was a team that that had two losses that if they could have gotten Alabama beat somewhere else, any of these other games that were close, Arkansas, LSU, Auburn, whatever – A&M, had they won out, would have gone to the SEC championship game. If they find a way to beat Georgia, that's your first two-loss team in the college football playoff in the four-team format. So, and then the last one that I wrote down was Auburn 24 and LSU 19. That was like the Bo Nix coming out party. That was the, for all intents and purposes, the end of the Ed Orgeron era at LSU. That was a pretty big game. Best players. So I wrote down several here, and I'll see if I'll get your opinion on these. How's that? So. N'Kobe Dean and Jordan Davis, linebacker and defensive lineman from Georgia. I went ahead and put them together because you could take basically Georgia's entire roster, really, and put it up there for best players in the SEC. But those are the two that I think stood out. Those were the two that I feel like meant the most to their national championship run. Like, those two are freaks, absolute freaks. For Alabama... there's a trifecta there: Bryce Young, Jameson Williams, and Will Anderson. Those three, I think, were the three biggest names, the ones that meant the most to Alabama's run. Without any one of those pieces, this whole thing falls apart. Just completely falls apart. Arkansas, Treylon Burks, the wide receiver. I think he was the most important player for Arkansas this season. Obviously, the defense stood up at certain times when they had to. KJ Jefferson was great. Burks was just the guy. When you needed a big play, he was the dude. You kind of feel the same on that one.
Yeah, no, I think he's got a chance to be the best receiver in this draft class too.
Oh, most certainly. For Kentucky, I think it is very fitting that the guy that I wrote down is Darian Kennard, the offensive tackle. He was incredible this season, and has been his entire career there. He's going to be a first round draft pick this year. But that's how Kentucky gets these things done, man. That's how they win, is they are able to dominate at the line of scrimmage in a way.
Yeah, they've got a couple of defensive guys that really, really stood up and had unbelievable seasons too.
So. Oh, most certainly. Most certainly. For Missouri ended up going to a bowl game. Like, it surprised everybody, and we'll talk about it, underachieved, overachieved, whatever. Tyler Beatty, the running back, I don't think anybody expected anything out of Missouri. And no, the defense couldn't stop the run, et cetera, and they had issues at quarterback with Connor Bazelak, and then they ended up going up with a couple other guys throughout the season when he got injured. But Tyler Beatty was consistent week in, week out, and had massive, massive games when a lot of people did not believe that he would. Auburn, Roger McCreary, the cornerback. Now, we could have put Bo Nix on here, I think. But, you know, Nix got hurt, team fell apart, et cetera. But that defense was still lights out, and it had to do with Roger McCreary. I think he might be the best cornerback in the SEC this year. McCreary was awesome, man. Like, he was.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I might give you that.
He was consistently put.
He was really, really good. Yeah. I was trying to think of some other guys that we're not thinking of, but he was really, really good. He's up there.
Matt Corral, quarterback at Ole Miss. Ole Miss does not go 10-2 without Matt Corral. Like,
Ole Miss doesn't make a bowl game without Matt Corral. I really believe that Matt's that good.
He might be the MVP of the league.
Yeah, I think he's the best player in the SEC. I've got Mississippi State friends that give me so much shit, and they think that I'm blowing that guy and I'm over because they only want to look at numbers. I've watched these football games, okay? And the reason his numbers sucked in a lot of those games is because the rest of the team sucks, okay? Yes. And they're just not – they're not super talented anywhere. All right, Matt Corral pulled them out of everything they got.
Oh, yeah.
When he needed to run, he could run. When he needed to throw, he could throw. He always made something happen, and he did it by himself a lot.
Yeah. No, he became a fantastic decision maker, right? Like, that's the biggest thing is when he was a freshman, kind of a hothead, had some issues. I mean, didn't even start. Like, he wasn't even playing. And once Lane Kiffin got there last season – completely changed. Like, he developed this kid. It just ridiculously developed. Texas A&M, DeMarvin Leal, the defensive lineman. I think that's the way that you go on this. I mean, obviously they got
Spiller too.
Spiller was great.
Spiller carried that team through some of those rough, tight games where just Calzano just couldn't get it done.
Yeah. No, the offense young, had major
young
issues.
And inexperienced, and Spiller was all they had, but he did a lot with very little.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. For Mississippi State, now we can say Will Rogers. We can come up with somebody on defense. I put Charles Cross on here, the offensive tackle. Now that I'm looking at it, like, Cross is great. Obviously, he's going to be a first-round NFL draft pick, but maybe it should have been Will Rogers.
Like, it's got to be Will. Yeah. It's just got to be.
That team doesn't do anything if Will Rogers is not good.
Like, no, when Will Rogers wasn't good, they did nothing. Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I mean, you could see it. When he had great performances, they put up ungodly numbers. When he didn't, they were awful.
Yes. Yes, indeed. And then finally, last one, Tennessee wide receiver Velus Jones Jr. He was a USC transfer, but this kid did everything. Kick returns, you know, it caught a ton of passes this year. Hendon Hooker, it is likely the most important player for them. But Velus Jones, I thought, was fantastic this year. And we don't want this to just be like all the best quarterbacks in the league, right? So I thought Velus Jones was awesome. There were other guys for Tennessee as well. They did a really good job of spreading the ball out. Let's talk about who exceeded expectations, met expectations, and who underachieved. Exceeded expectations. I've got Ole Miss going 10-2, well, 10-3 if you got the Sugar Bowl. Arkansas got to 9 wins, 9-4. Kentucky, another 10-win season, 2 in the last 4 years. Tennessee at 7-6, exceeded expectations. You agree with that?
I'll agree with that.
And so, bowl game aside.
I don't know. No, I'm not going to give them that because I think that was my expectation for them, or maybe even more.
Interesting. With what they lost after last year, with all the stuff that went on with Jeremy Pruitt, them making a bowl game, I thought was exceeding expectations.
You might be right, but my expectations were higher than everybody else's. I thought this team could be good, and I know Josh Heupel's a good coach. I know a lot of people didn't think that. I do.
Yeah. So that makes sense. South Carolina 7-6 also put exceeding expectations.
Absolutely, exceeded expectations.
Yeah, Shane Beamer has established a culture already in Columbia, so that is, you know, that makes sense. As far as teams that met expectations, Georgia, obviously, they met their expectations. I don't think they exceeded expectations. They were a national title contender. Just because you win a national title does not mean that you exceed the expectation. Alabama 13-2, met expectations. You know, everybody knew there'd be a little bit of a drop-off going forward this year. You could say they exceeded by getting to the national title game. No, this team met expectations. I mean, just bottom line. Mississippi State, 7-6. They lost the bowl game, but they went 7-5. They exceeded their win total for the year, but this is about what we expected from this team. 6-6, 7-5, somewhere around there. You know, you expect the bump in year two of Mike Leach. So you agree with that?
I think so.
All right. And then met expectations, last one, Missouri, 6-7. I think getting to a bowl game was what everybody kind of expected, right? Like, there was a chance they could have gone 5-7, they could have gone 7-5, and they ended up 6-6. They lost their bowl game. But, like, 6-6, getting to a bowl is about what we expected out of Missouri this year. As far as teams that underachieved, we'll go on and put Vandy on here at 2-10, although maybe that was their expectation to begin with. We didn't expect much out of them. Auburn, 6-7. That was underachieved. Now, that could have been completely different had Bo Nix gotten hurt, or not gotten hurt, right?
Yep.
LSU, 6-7. That is underachieving at LSU, for sure. Texas A&M, 8-4. That's underachieving. Like,
yeah, but so if you're giving Auburn some kind of weird-ass pass, you're not going to give A&M a pass for losing their starting quarterback week two? Like, they've got to play the entire season with a backup that they weren't expecting to play through the SEC team
I think,
the calendar, and he's not really good.
So normally I would have put them at, like, met expectations, but when you get through the bad part and you lose to Arkansas, you lose to Mississippi State, like, that's okay because you beat Alabama, and then you go on this run, right? But then you get caught
by Ole Miss to LSU.
And you lose to LSU. I think that's below what their expectations were coming into this season. I mean, they were ranked in the top 5 or 6.
I understand that, but I'm telling you, if you tell me your starting quarterback goes down week two in the middle of a game and against Colorado, and you're going to play the rest of the year with Matt Calzada, and you tell me they get to 8 wins, I think everybody at AM takes that.
Probably so. Maybe that should be a meet expectations.
That's the difference is what do you think of Calzada, and what do you think people thought of him before the season started?
Well, I'll tell you this. It depends on the definition of expectations. Is the expectations before the season or in the middle of the season, right?
Like, well, they got to change when something like that happens. If Matt Corral gets hit by a bus, like, the expectation for Ole Miss has to change.
Yes.
They can't stay the same. That would be irrelevant. That wouldn't make sense. If Nick Saban had a stroke on the middle of the sideline in week one, the expectation for Alabama has to change.
Yeah. No, you're not wrong about that.
You just can't say, well, we had them win the national title, and they didn't. So they didn't meet the expectations. Yeah. Yeah, that happened because something major happened. Something catastrophic happened.
True. The last one that I've got for underachieved was Florida, 6-7. Yeah. Dan Mullen obviously loses his job. That place, I mean, I still cannot get over how quickly that thing unraveled. I mean, Gainesville was just a disaster this year. Good Lord. And then finally, we got two coaching changes to get through. LSU obviously parted ways with Ed Orgeron, brought in Brian Kelly. Still think a perfect hire. Perfect hire, because you just needed somebody to come in and reestablish what is going in. You got a great coach in Baton Rouge now. So, you know, we'll see what all goes on at the coaching staff
is
done.
Staff is fully hired.
Yep.
And a player that LSU doesn't want won't leave the state.
That's interesting. A player that LSU doesn't want won't leave the state.
I don't know if I said that right. I'm just saying going forward.
Zero players.
If LSU wants a kid, he's going to LSU. If you're from Louisiana and you want to play at LSU and they want you, you're going there and you're not leaving.
Bottom line. Yeah, I tend to agree.
Zero kids are getting out of the state that LSU doesn't want.
Oh, yeah.
LSU wants. Sorry.
I Frank Wilson.
Way too many negatives in that, and I got confused.
I see what you were trying to say. Frank Wilson being hired on as the recruiting coordinator was – just perfect
time. Well, it's not just him. I mean, the entire staff is nothing but Louisiana guys.
Yeah.
They took a guy from Boston, and everyone said he can't win in the South, and all he did was do what he always does, hires great, great staff.
Agreed. And then Florida brought in Billy Napier from Louisiana, you know, Louisiana Lafayette, and that one was an interesting one because it was completely different than the way that LSU went about their hire, and I think can still work, but...
Well, the ADs that run these two programs are completely different.
Completely different. I don't know that it's better or worse, right? I think it's just different ways of going about it.
Well, the problem is Florida's notoriously been cheap their entire life.
That's what I was about
like,
to get at.
To be a big boy in the SEC now, you got to start paying like a big boy when, you know, when Ole Miss is doubling up the salary of your coach. At some point in time, you got to say, how long are you going to be able to keep great coaches in Florida and attract great people in Florida?
And don't get me wrong, I understand Florida.
They were dead last to the table in the SEC outside of Vanderbilt for facilities and thinking those things were important. I think Billy Napier is a great coach. I also think if you're not willing to break open the checkbook and sign somebody to $7 to $9 million, because that's what great coaches are going for now, then, you know, at some point in time, Florida's going to be a stepping stone program.
Right. When you said break open the checkbook, it's not even so much paying Billy Napier. It's making sure that the staff gets paid and that everything that you need at the school gets taken care of. Right.
Yes.
Georgia just won a national championship. Georgia's recruiting budget is $1 million more than the next highest in the SEC, and that's Alabama. Like, that you got to have great players. You got to be able to do all these different things. And Billy Napier could have success.
That's right.
But
I think Billy Napier's a great coach. I think Billy Napier is going to be good. I also think that Florida brings on its own a lot of problems. How great could Florida have been over the last decade if they just used all that football TV money that they've been getting?
Agreed.
What are they doing with it?
I guess working on other stuff at the school?
They are programs? Paying like seven coaches at one time all the time.
Yeah.
Because they can't hit on a coaching hire. Well, you know, at some point in time, fire the athletic director because he's got to hit on a coach.
Yeah. Yeah, Strickland bringing in, like, obviously his first head coaching hire was, at least in football, was Dan Mullen. And Dan Mullen was incredibly successful at Mississippi State when he worked with Scott Strickland. Florida is a different beast. It just is. You know, and we'll see what ends up going forward. He hasn't had to make a basketball coaching hire. He's only been there, you know, a short while. But, I mean, Mike White's not exactly tearing it up in basketball. So... we'll see. Now, gymnastics, we can start going through sport by sport. Like, Florida's still in good shape. But
that's fine. That's not why the athletic director's paid.
Right. They're not there.
Don't hire an athletic director to hire the gymnastics coach.
Agreed.
You just don't. Stanford doesn't hire an athletic director to hire a swim coach, even though they're the best in the world at swim. Right. No. That's not why you hire the AD.
Exactly.
Because football, there are two sports that make you money. And you hire them to make and run the two things that make you money so you can do the other things.
Agreed. There's two main revenue sports. It's those two, football and basketball. They are the front porch of your
university.
And baseball
is getting up there, and Florida's kind of going backwards in that. They used to be awesome at baseball. And the rest of the SEC some of them are lapping them, and the rest of them just passing them.
No, you're right about that. You were right about that. Is there anything else that we need to bring up for the SEC Rewind?
No, let's get out of here.
Let's do it. All right, you guys have been fantastic. We certainly appreciate everybody that's watching. If you haven't already liked the video for us, make sure that you are subscribed everywhere that you need to be subscribed. And Chris, this is fun. This is nice on a Martin Luther King Jr. holiday to go on and knock this thing out. Everybody, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and hopefully, all of your tickets cash this week. Thanks for checking out Winning Cures Everything. If you want to keep up with us, hit subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast app, visit the website at winningcureseverything.com, or you can like us on Facebook or follow us at Winning Cures, at Gary WCE, or at Chris B. Giannini on Twitter. Share out the show, leave a nice review, and make sure to comment and tweet at us.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.